This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is the Escape Hour. Fiona, we have a fabulous guest today.
Absolutely. You know, there is a destination, Russ, I'm sure that you're well familiar with, because I'm no doubt you would get many, many inquiries, and that is the Camino de Santiago. And today we have Emma Ferris, who has done the Camino and is going to give us a really great rundown of the experience, spiritual or not, of the Camino, give us some really great tips and suggestions about how to do it. And we're so thrilled to have you on the air. Thanks so much, Emma, for coming into the studio.
My pleasure. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I believe that the Camino doesn't give you what you want. It gives you what you need.
Yes.
Tell us about this famous quote.
Well, you meet lots of very interesting people on the Camino, and some of the people that I met, there's a quote that's passed on from pilgrim to pilgrim, and that's indeed that one. So a lot of people go to the Camino with a certain expectation of spiritual enlightenment or an epiphany, as you were talking about before, but you may not get what you think you're going to get, but you get what you need. Is sounds like the Rolling Stones song, doesn't it?
It does.
Were you humming that while you were doing the walk?
Yeah. No, I listen to a lot of music. A lot of people don't take anything, though, when they're walking the Camino, but I certainly took some music. So, there are certain things that you take away from it that you didn't realise you might get, so it's really a wonderful experience.
And there is another quote as well, which we spoke about, which the Camino starts when you finish.
Yes, that was quite interesting. I met some lovely German pilgrims toward the end of the Camino, and they were quite philosophical, and they were telling me that they believed the talk also on the Camino is that your real Camino starts after it finishes, so that you should go on into go back to your normal life and try and bring some of that Camino spirit with you and, do something exciting with your life.
Wow, it just sounds like the experience that people have when they come back from Burning Man in the Nevada desert.
Possibly. I haven't done that, but I'd love to.
So let's go back to some very practical points.
Absolutely.
Where you started, how many days you did, how many kilometres, all those sorts of...
And I'm just going to interrupt there and go back one step even further. For us joysters that don't know where the Camino is, you know, what country are we in?
We're in Spain.
Thank you very much.
And it's in the northern part of Spain. But it's where I started, traditionally, the Way of St. James, it starts in France. It's St. Jean de Pied-Port, I think that's right. Mm. And so that's traditionally your first day where you start if you want to do the entire pilgrimage.
Yes.
So you start there and you walk over the Pyrenees. I think it took me 36 days, but I had three rest days. But actually that's including, I did continue on to Finisterre, which is the end of the world, they call it in Spain. Most people finish at Santiago. So, it took 36 days on foot. You're averaging around 20 kilometres a day, but that really depends on how much time you've got and how long you'd like to walk for each day.
God, I'm gobsmacked that, you know, someone would do... How many Ks was it again, Emma?
So on average, in total, I walked 880 kilometres on foot with my backpack.
That's
10 kilos.
Super to me.
We need some applause for that, don't
Thank
we?
You. But it's quite an amazing experience because you are outdoors and you're walking from A to B, basically, and you're not used to that in normal life. You're catching public transport or vehicles. So this is an experience of you getting yourself from one side of a country to another. So it's quite remarkable.
And, of course, we need to make sure that our listeners understand there's no tents, that this is an experience where you're staying every night in an alberg or...
Albergue, you know, yes.
Albergue, and there's a number of different... I thought alberg was like an iceberg. An albergue. But there are, of course, every types of accommodation. You can stay in the dormitories, you can stay in five-star hotels.
Absolutely. So it just depends what you're after on the Camino. You need a pilgrim's passport, basically, if you want to get your Compostela at the end of the pilgrimage. But there are beautiful five-star hotels where you can still get your passport stamped to say that you're a real pilgrim. But then there are a certain albergues which are very reasonably priced, around €12 a night.
Oh, wow.
You may be paying €10 for a pilgrim's meal as well. But it just depends. You may not like to spend a night in a dorm with 50 other men and women, some possibly snoring on bunk beds, squeaking. That may not be your cup of tea, but you can certainly go two-star, three-star hotels. Sometimes on the Camino, I stayed in a hotel room on my own that had a bath, just because I wanted to have a bath and relax my body and also be on my own. But that was very rare. Most of the time, I didn't mind at all sharing these rooms and in different albergues.
And so albergue basically means it's the place where you're going to get your Camino passport stamped to say that you've walked this distance on that particular day.
Yeah, well, they're pilgrim-only hostels, so no one else can stay in them unless you have a pilgrim's passport, and they are reasonably priced. So not everyone can stay in them. It's pilgrims only, yeah.
Wow.
Which makes it nice, because then it would just open it up to different types of people who weren't on the Camino, I suppose, yeah.
And before I interrupted, before Fee did start to touch on this, what is the pilgrimage? How did it all start, and why do people... Is it basically a walk, a spiritual walk to get people to Santiago for some spiritual reason, or is it... And if I've asked the question, you don't know the answer, we don't have to answer it.
No.
I assured Emma we weren't going to delve too much into the history of the Camino, so she...
That's okay. Traditionally, it started... it wasn't religious. I hope I'm right on this one. I think I am. It wasn't religious, but St. James was buried at the cathedral, and so people were... I don't know this exactly, sorry. They walked from one place to another, and then it became religious, where it's considered that if you walk the way of St. James, all your sins are cleared and you receive penance, I think.
And that's where the pilgrimage comes into it. That makes 100%.
But don't quote me on that, because I certainly didn't go for religious reasons, but a lot of people do.
Yeah. So why did you choose to go?
Well, I'd seen a documentary on Lonely Planet about it in my early 20s, and it was just something I'd always wanted to do, because it looked amazing to go on a holiday where you walk from one place to another. Mm. And that's what I was attracted to, so I finally did it.
So a good mutual friend of yours and mine has recently done this as well.
Yes.
And she advocates very highly that people should do it on their own.
Absolutely.
And that is the best way to get to really develop the connections with with the other pilgrims that you're walking with. Tell us more about travelling on your own through this area.
Well, it was something that I wanted to do. I was quite apprehensive to begin with, because I didn't know enough about it. And I think my family and friends were saying, you have to do it with a group. And then I met a girl in the hair salon about a week before I left Australia to go on my journey, and she said, you do not need to go with anyone. Mm. And I thought, well, being a single woman, absolutely safe, it is remarkable how many people you meet straight away, how safe and supported you feel. I was never scared once, and that's 880 kilometres on my own. But you're constantly, as I said, you're surrounded by different pilgrims. If you want to walk on your own, you can. But you know you've got people, you know, 20 kilometres ahead, or, you know, you've got people 200 metres ahead or behind, more or less. There's always someone around. So please, if you're thinking about it and you're a single woman, do not be afraid. Or single man, it's very safe, feels very safe, and you'll be right.
That's fabulous.
Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour with Russ and Fee, and we've just had a great message come in about the Camino, haven't we?
Well, we have, and, you know, I don't want to alarm everyone, because the great thing is that Emma is going to talk through this. The most important thing about this message is it was the most incredible experience of their lives. So our listener has said that they did the Camino with five friends. Before we started, we all voiced our biggest fears. We walked for 30 days, and within the period, each of us experienced our biggest fear. From being robbed to being incapacitated, I'm assuming that means blisters, to being attacked by dogs. However, it was the most incredible experience of our lives. Emma, would you concur to some of those aspects? Not about being robbed or attacked by dogs.
I wasn't robbed or attacked by dogs. There was lots of talk of be wary of the dogs. Luckily, that didn't happen to me. Obviously, there's lots of dogs for security reasons in the different farming communities that you walk through. People not wanting anyone to be stealing anything, so that's why there are dogs that you may encounter on the Camino. Wasn't robbed, thankfully, but obviously incapacitated. I did get some tendonitis in the knee, so I had to have a rest day. Horrific blisters, lost toenails. I mean, that's the guts and the glory. You know, you just seem to put up with all of that and keep on walking because there's this incredible experience that just takes everything else away, all the bad and the pain, I guess.
I'm going to get all gory here. What happens when you lose a toenail? So you were just walking so much that the toenail turned black and fell out.
Yes.
God almighty.
It's not pretty.
No, certainly
not pretty.
Well, of course, the other thing is the story of the people that help you along the way, teach you how to deal with your blisters, all
absolutely.
Those
absolutely. I mean, it's quite remarkable. So I got the most severe blisters and I was in a little shop. No one could speak any English and I was pointing to my feet and a lady spoke to me in Spanish. Unfortunately, I didn't understand, but we worked out that she was going to drive me to a chemist up the road where I could get some necessities, and then she drove me back, and that was it. Just a complete stranger. We couldn't speak each other's languages, but she helped me. There was another American lady who had lots of medical supplies. She had a syringe and she syringed some of my blisters. The amazing thing about the Camino is how you have this support network.
Wow.
At your fingertips without you even realising it. Everyone is there to help you.
And the obvious point here is you don't need... I mean, look, unfortunately, as Australians, we're not often required to learn another language, and so people I know are a bit afraid of going to another country where English is not spoken, but... My experience of Europe, and it certainly sounds that yours is the same, that people will help you in any situation, regardless if they can speak English or not. And
absolutely.
It's amazing, that sort of feeling.
It isn't. Yeah, it just goes to show that language is not a barrier to communication.
Absolutely. Yes. And a blister is a blister in any language.
Exactly. And no one wants anyone to go through pain, do they?
No, they don't.
So the other thing is, too, of course, you don't have to carry your backpack of your worldwide possessions. You can actually have it delivered from hotel to hotel.
Absolutely, you can. And that was the great thing for myself, who had a bit of a knee injury. They suggested I stop carrying my backpack for a few days, which I did. They have a great thing called Yako Trans. It's basically a little courier service. You put a little thing on your backpack in the albergue that you're staying on, write down the next albergue you're staying in the next town, and they'll transport it for you for around €4. It may have gone up, but it's so cheap.
Nice.
And, you know, your body does get tired and you are carrying quite a bit of weight on your back. So it's okay if you don't want to carry your backpack every day. Some people look down their nose at you and think you're not a real pilgrim if you don't carry that backpack. There's all that pressure. Are you a real pilgrim or not? But at the end of the day, you just get whichever way you can get through it, you do it.
So now, sorry.
No, you go. I'm interrupting you. You're first.
All of this walking is making me think, of course, of food.
Yes.
And for someone like me who absolutely thinks about where my next meal is coming from after I finish my first one, how do you navigate the meals? So there's the pilgrim's dinner that you can have in the albergues every night, and then what about your lunches? I mean, do you buy lunch along the way, or is it packed for you in your hotel? Because I know at when you do the Kamado Kodo in Japan, the hotel will actually prepare lunch for you.
Yes. Well, the first albergue I stayed in, you could get a little packed lunch first day, which was quite nice. But apart from that, you're on your own. And generally, you'll walk past a little town where you can stop and have a breakfast break or lunch break. So there aren't many places where you're not without food. So you can buy some supplies. I must say, I found, interestingly enough, that I wasn't that hungry during the day. So, you know, in terms of food, you've got, you don't have to worry too much about not going without, I suppose.
And of course, there are lots of different options because you're eating beautiful Spanish food along the way, incredibly delicious.
Absolutely. Look, I'm a vegetarian, unfortunately, so I miss out on a lot of the beautiful jamón and other beautiful Spanish delicacies. But you still can get your way through. I mean, some of the beautiful cities you go through. Pamplona is where I was first introduced to the pinchos.
Obviously,
yeah, amazing. So if you're not familiar with what pinchos is, it's a tapas for the northerners in the Basque area of Spain. Mm-hmm. And I was taught by a local Spanish girl that I met on the Camino. You just go to the first bar, you have your first pinchos and a drink, and then you move on to the next. So you do all this bar and food hopping, wonderful way to travel and eat.
Absolutely, because you're experiencing the local cuisine, the local wines.
Yes.
I mean, I hear from a number of sources that this is not a health retreat, that there is a great deal of wine to be consumed. And, Russ, you know that there is actually a wine fountain.
Is there?
There's a wine fountain, a free wine fountain in one of the towns. Yep, absolutely.
And so you're going there for sure, I would imagine.
I am. I just couldn't believe it when I heard it, but it is
true. Neither could I. I couldn't believe it either because I hadn't, I didn't really study up on my guidebook prior to going on the Camino. So a lot of the pilgrims give you the information. When I heard about the wine fountain, I didn't believe it, but it is... in a fantastic spot between Estella and Los Arcos. A fantastic vineyard has provided this tap, wine on tap, into this fantastic wall. Choose between white or red.
Amazing.
And that's the only reason I bought a cup.
I was going to say, did you fill your water bottle?
Exactly.
make for an interesting trek.
Who needs water when you've got wine?
That's right.
So that was just quite a remarkable experience. It's open to the pilgrims from 8 a.m. until, I think, 5 p.m., so you can fill up your cup and have a... And the wine is just amazing.
Wow.
And you walk through so many vineyards as well along the Camino. And the wine is so affordable as well. It's just magnificent. So it's got everything, the Camino. It's got your food, your wine, the people, the pain of the blisters.
It just sounds so exciting. What preparation did you have to do? Like I did hear you mention 2 seconds ago that you were pre-booking your albergues every night.
No, not every night.
Not
you don't have
night?
To. No, no. Good. Some people. It depends the sort of personality type you are and the time of year.
Yeah.
In summer, you'd really be looking at booking the night before, the night or the day ahead. But generally, you'd be okay. But it is getting busier. So Manuela, who we were both talking about before, she found that you had to book. She's just recently been on the Camino. You have to book.
It is good to know. I mean, depending on your personality type, I like to book because I like to know where I'm staying.
Yes.
But by the same token, you know, it does mean that if you decide to have a rest day, can you stay an extra night? So
yes.
To a certain extent, the nature of walking means that you want to give yourself some flexibility. You want to loosen up some of those kinds of things that you carry around with you. You need to be able to, you know, be in a... Well, you don't need to, but it would be beneficial if you could loosen up some of those restrictions that you might have.
Absolutely. The restrictions aren't something that you want on the Camino because you may miss out on experience.
Exactly.
And, you know, and for me, that's what the important part of the Camino was. But having said that, you don't want to miss out on these other experiences if you do book ahead. For example, it was a very hot day. I went through my guidebook. I thought, oh, there's an albergue with a swimming pool. So we planned ahead, got the swimming pool at the end of the walking. So that sort of pre-planning is not a bad thing when you get all your other pilgrim friends to come and stay there with you. So,
and here's my point. You made friends along the way, and then the next minute you're travelling with a group of people anyway. Was that...
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a great way to meet new people, yeah?
Well, that's what I was saying before to Fiona, is that very rare that you get an experience of travelling for 36 days where you're walking often with the same people to develop that level of intimate friendship. Well, normally when you go away on a trip, you might meet someone on a boat, a train station, at a hostel or a hotel, but it's not that long.
That absolutely, and you know, those relationships aren't necessarily going to last. But you were talking about how the Camino family continues on long after you've left the Camino.
Absolutely, and that's the beauty of things like Facebook, that you can stay in touch and you form these incredibly strong bonds which you don't expect before going on the Camino, and that's the real joy of the Camino. And I'm still in touch with majority of my pilgrim friends that I made on the Camino, and that was 4 years ago.
A number of well-known Australians have done the Camino. In fact, there's a couple who were very well-known, Graham Simpson, for example, who wrote The Rosie Project, and his wife, Anne. They did the Camino, came back, gave up their professional jobs and became writers and authors. Anne's just published her own book. So it does have the ability to transform. Emma, when you came back, what were some of the things that you experienced about life back in Melbourne?
I must say, one of the first things you notice after spending that much time outdoors every day, you know, a good 7 hours a day outdoors is, I mean, that's the first thing I noticed was, wow, we really don't spend that much time out in nature and we don't walk very far. Mm-hmm. Now I walk a lot. I don't think twice of it. You know, I live in Albert Park, so I walk into the city, walk to work. You know, you see people waiting at tram stops and you think, what are you doing? You could walk into the city, you're not that far. So those simple things change you. And then overall, I just think it gives you just some time out to think. You come home and certain things are more important in your life, I guess. The materialistic things aren't as important, because on the Camino it's all about scaling your life back, and the simple things are the things that make you really happy on the Camino. I think I was saying before, even a shower hook in a bathroom. We take all of this for granted in our day-to-day lives, so that when we step out of our comfort zone and our normal day-to-day lives, these simple things really make us happy, and you come back to your day-to-day life and you think, wow, there's so much that I could be grateful for, I suppose.
You're on Joy 94.9. We're here with Emma talking about the Camino.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
This is the Escape Hour. We are walking the Camino. Well, we're talking the Camino right now with Emma Ferris. Emma, I would love to hear some of the stories of the people that you met and the landscape of the Camino. It just sounds completely fascinating. Russ and I are totally hooked.
Yes.
Tell us more.
Well, your first day, if you're starting in France, is you're walking across the Pyrenees. Now, that sounds like you have to, it's a serious trekking, but it's not really. Rolling green hills, horses with cowbells, which I just couldn't understand.
A horse with a cowbell.
So many horses roaming free with cowbells. And eventually I worked out that in parts of Spain, horse meat is a delicacy there.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I think that that's what was going on with the poor horses with the cowbells.
No.
But at the time, I didn't realise that. So some magnificent scenery. And other parts where it's just very much open, flat open plains, golden fields, lots of sunflowers. You're walking through a lot of farming communities, so very small communities, sometimes not a lot of people around, but always a bar around wherever you go in Spain.
It's the Spanish, isn't it?
It's wonderful, yes. I didn't realise how popular gin was in Spain until I went there.
I'm just curious, getting back with the Spanish, where was the Camino walk like the Spanish, where you would walk for 5 or 6 hours, you'd have your siesta, and then you might wake up and walk another 2 hours and then get ready for a 10 o'clock meal in the evening?
No, unfortunately, you couldn't indulge in the late eating interesting because at most of the albergues, you had the curfew was 10 p.m. So that just gets people under control, back out of the bars and back into bed, ready to start another day on the Camino.
So there's a sensible side to everything, right?
There is, which was quite interesting at times because once we stayed at a place where the nuns were running it and we're out the back having some more vino tinto and the nuns would come out and shake their fingers at you and say, it's time to go back to, you know, it's curfew, you have to get back inside. So the interesting experiences like that. But the other fabulous thing, if you're Australian and you walk the Camino, toward the end, you start walking through some amazing eucalypt forests. So you, if it rains, you get that beautiful smell of eucalypts, which takes you back home.
Yeah.
Which was really nice, yeah. I thought. I was quite shocked. I didn't realise they had gum trees over there, but they planted them.
They do. They have quite a lot of gum trees in Spain and Portugal. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the countryside's quite amazing. Lots of people cycle the Camino as well.
Right.
And some days you think, God, I wish I was on a bike. You know, and then other days when you're walking up a rocky hill, you think, oh God, I'm glad I'm not on a bike. So, yeah, it's quite spectacular. So many interesting people. I guess for me, the Camino is really about the people that you meet and their interesting stories that they share with you. I mean, people have lost loved ones, they may have had cancer, they may have not had any of those things, but quite open. There's this interesting openness that people have on the Camino. So, you know, I met one guy at the very beginning. His father had done the Camino a few years before him. They'd walked together a few days and then he went back to the Netherlands. His father continued on, walked to Ponferrada, stayed in an albergue and sadly had a heart attack and passed away in the albergue a few years prior. So it was his job to complete the Camino for his father.
Lovely. Mm.
And he had a beautiful plaque that they put up at this certain albergue we stayed in that his father passed away in.
Oh.
We had a little ceremony. Lots of people have lost people and they are walking to sort of get through their grief.
Fair enough.
And some people don't. Some people are walking because this is something they've always wanted to do, but they meet remarkable people and hear stories. And I think everyone in their own journeys of life have had difficult times. So this is just another way to share stories, I suppose.
Now, did you feel very brave going off and doing this by yourself? Were there any nerves in there thinking, can I do this? Or, you know, I'm going and that's it.
I was going and that was it.
Wow.
Nothing was going to stop me. And that's what happens also on the Camino. Once you start, you don't want it to stop. And it's quite sad when some people experience injuries and that's it, they can't continue on.
Yeah.
And that is quite heartbreaking. Some people only do the Camino for a few weeks or a few, you know, a week or two, and they have to go back to their homes because they don't have that time from their jobs. Mm. And it's heartbreaking to leave the Camino when you haven't finished it.
Yeah. Mm. And there are, you can do just sections only,
absolutely,
can't you?
Absolutely, yeah. You can, and a lot of people do because they don't have the privilege of having all that time off work to be able to spend 36 days on the road or, you know, so.
And you mentioned that there are a lot of older people on the trail as well, so
absolutely.
Retirees.
Absolutely.
And that people up to the age, you've met people or known of people up to the age of 90 who have walked the Camino.
Absolutely, a lot of retirees. I mean, if you're thinking, oh my goodness, I can't walk that far, how do you do it? Well, then lessons to be learned by our older community, women, men in their 70s, 80s, 90s walking the Camino, and they're so supported as well by everyone on the journey. So if you're thinking about it, it's not too late. As you get older in life, it's for everyone, in fact.
I just, you know, to get to day 36 and realise what you've done, what an achievement.
Absolutely.
It does feel good.
It would. It would. You just could not imagine how good that must feel. And I love the perspective that you've got out of it, that there's more to life than material things and belongings and how busy we all are here at home in Melbourne. You must just feel like a different person.
Well, you do. It just enriches the good parts of yourself as well, I think. Mm. That's what I loved about it. But you do feel very proud when you get to Santiago. There's also this amazing thing when you finally get there, there may be pilgrims that you have not seen for weeks or days and you run into them because you're all on the same sort of timelines and you just embrace each other like you've known them for 20 years or more.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, so you just run up to each other and hug each other. And
what's Santiago like when you get to the end?
It's spectacular because there's a beautiful cathedral at the end. There's a mass if you're religious or non-religious. It's a nice thing to experience. There's a beautiful giant ball full of incense that they swing from a rope from the ceiling, and it's very spectacular to watch. So you don't necessarily have to be religious to go in there and enjoy the mass. It's all in Spanish, so I didn't understand a word of it. I got into trouble a few times because I was talking. But, you know, it's just wall-to-wall pilgrims. So it's lovely finishing there, and you'll find at the end there's lots of pilgrims going to restaurants and having big tables of big dinners, farewell dinners, because that's the end for a lot of people. You're saying goodbye to these people you've become so fond of. So it's quite sad as well as, you know, exciting at the same time.
But you chose to go the extra 80 kilometres to the end of the world. What was that? Why did you decide to do that?
Because I thought I'd come this far and I had the time, and I also had my stepfather's ashes with me.
Wow, that's a little wrinkle of the story you saved to the end.
It was, yes. He unfortunately passed away of cancer, and we went and saw the movie The Way prior to me going on the Camino, and he said to me, Emma, at the end of the film, his son's ashes are, I don't know if you, Martin Sheen's character's son dies on the Camino. Anyway, he sprinkles some ashes at the end of the Camino, and my stepfather said, oh, Emma, I'd really love it if you could do that for me. So the last 3 days I carried his ashes. I didn't carry them the entire journey. And they were sent to me, which is where I was staying in Santiago, and I walked with them for the last 3 days and then put them out to sea at this most spectacular spot in Finisterre. It was gorgeous, and it was a really nice thing to do. Mm. So it was just an extra thing that I added to my journey, which made it even more richer, I suppose.
That's absolutely wonderful.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Wow, Joy 94.9 Escape Hour. Fiona, this show has been super, absolutely fabulous.
Super. I feel like we've really got a sense of the Camino. I feel very excited about the potential to get there. I mean, you know, all you have to do is just make a decision, book your flights. When's the best time to travel there, do you think?
They say to avoid summer, the peak of summer, so prior to summer and after. I started it in August and went through to October, so depends. And then avoiding the crowds, obviously, European holidays.
Well, Emma, we really appreciate you coming in. It's been fantastic.
We would love to have you come back on again whenever your next journey is, and and tell us all. I'm in awe of you. I just love the fact that you've done something so fabulous by yourself. That's what travel's all about, a journey, and you've really, you're amazing. So good.
Thank you. And I just encourage everyone to give it a go, and you should not be disappointed. It's an amazing experience, and thank you for having me.
We'll be back next week, won't we, Fiona?
We will be.
The Escape Hour, 1 p.m. Tad will still be away, but we're going to have some fabulous guests. This is the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.